You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
Today's free-flowing conversation is with the one and only Jordan Stevens.
Hello, people of Hope and Anchor. Are you with me? This is good for me because I'm sober 9 years. Woo! Let's go. 9 years, no alcohol. Obviously, not judging anybody who does drink. You know, it's just like, you know, it's good to have breaks. I am Jordan Stevens. I am an author and writer and performer, probably is the best way of saying it. Most proud of writing a book recently called Avoidance, Drugs, Heartbreak and Dogs. Probably better known in the UK as being half of poppy hip-hop duo Rizzle Kicks. We still make music, to be fair. But so I've actually been knocking about for like a while. 15 years. So if you don't know that, that's absolutely fine. That's not like any pressure. If you have no clue who I am, that's actually kind of ideal, to be honest. So there's my brief intro. And hi.
Okay. That was very
good. Was
that
good?
That was excellent.
All right.
Yeah.
Now you'll go.
I'm less interesting.
No.
Okay.
That's so untrue. What the? What are you starting with that for?
But I haven't written a book.
Don't create a hierarchy in this conversation. That is, you've already upset me, Phoebe.
Okay, I apologize.
What's your favorite thing about you?
My favorite thing about me is that I love people.
See?
Yeah. And can basically talk to a brick wall.
Great.
Which I really enjoy. Some people don't enjoy as much.
Right. Talking to brick walls.
Well, that gets funny looks, but it's also like, I think sometimes people want to be left alone.
Right, of course. So you've got to read the room.
So talking of Rizzle Kicks, I won extra cool points with my brother because I told him I was interviewing you and he was like, that actually is quite cool.
Okay, great.
His impression of a bunch of Christians in a field is not this.
Right.
Does this live up to what you were expecting?
I did not know this was a Christian festival. I literally had no idea. It took me so long to why is it people keep talking about, like, and also I was, in my talk, for anybody who did see my talk earlier, I'm just very glad you guys are like liberal Christians, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm clearly you guys are very welcoming of opposing ideas because I was just straight in with like, isn't religion mad patriarchal? And like, why has no one got any stories where women aren't being blamed? And like, Eve's fine, actually. I think she should have eaten the apple. What about that? But I did not know. And then my friend interviewing me, Isaac, well-known Christian, Governor B, I didn't realize that was also part of this. I just thought it was a coincidence. I was like, these people are talking a lot about God, Isaac. Do you like this? Like, this is... So that's great. Thank you for not praying for something to strike me down. That's great. I'm really into that. So... My imagination of Christians in a field clearly is I had none. Now this is it. You guys are my So there are many parts of organized religion which I appreciate, and one of them is community, and it seems that it's a lovely community, so I can't knock that. Can't knock that, even if I would rewrite some of the scripture. Anyway.
There are definitely people in here who are with you.
They are, aren't they? You can be casual Christian, no? You can be like a no? I don't know.
Yeah. Casual Christian.
I don't know. Can you update things? Who knows?
I think you should.
There's different phases, right? I don't know.
Yeah. So on that note, organizational religion, institutional religion, I loved in your book, very good, would highly recommend, that you spoke about your spirituality and your experiences in Brazil and was your family's relationship with spirituality. So... What is your relationship to spirituality?
Am I allowed to talk about other gods in the presence of Christians?
We encourage it.
To give some context to what you're referencing, in my book, in short, for people who haven't read it, is about my own journey, I believe, into something along the lines of manhood from boyhood via... A relationship that I ruined, and then decided I didn't want to ruin any more relationships, so I did some therapy. And at one point, I disappeared to Brazil because I thought that was a really unique and cool thing to do, and then realized that actually loads of hopeless romantics do things like that. And they like, oh my God, I need to go to South America to find myself. Oh my God. And so that wasn't that original at all. But I went there, and my uncle was part of an Afro-Brazilian cult called Candomblé. And in Candomblé, they believe in orishas. And actually, I believe some of these orishas, well, at least I was told that the energy of some of these orishas actually do show up as saints. And yes, actually, I'm sorry, I'm just getting like, I'm just downloading information. You know what I mean? Like, I was assigned one orisha called Ogun, and apparently one of Ogun's forms is actually St. George, so I don't know. But yes, I am open to all ideas, possibilities, the presence of something beyond me. I do not consider myself supreme. I don't think myself as like, I don't think humans are the most powerful form of life. So on, in that space, I think I, you know, can find a lot of unity with people's beliefs. But no, I don't have, you know, outside of that, my I do have many frustrations with organized religion just because of course, we see the other extremes of the situation, and that seems to incur a lot of harm. And yeah, so that's it really. I don't know. And I don't know enough also, but I'll happily say that I don't know enough to really have like a massive, massive opinion. I just am interested in faith. I'm interested in spirituality. And I myself have had moments of feeling in touch with something greater than me. I just don't know what that is.
Okay.
Yes. And what about you?
What do I believe in? So I grew up in the Methodist Church. Don't know how much you know about the Methodist Church.
I don't know the specifics.
How do I summarize Methodism in like a sentence?
No, 30 seconds.
Basically, it came out of the Church of England I'm feeling the pressure. Also, like, there's loads of people here who used to be my colleagues in the Methodist Church. Right. So they're going to be like, did you do the reading that you were supposed to do?
Oh, damn, you get homework in Methodist Church.
Yeah.
Damn.
Basically, we are a very open, generally liberal church. We're a dry church. That is not to say that every Methodist is teetotal, but you're not allowed alcohol on the premises.
Okay.
So if you go for communion in a Methodist church, it won't be alcoholic. Which
there's no wine.
There's no wine, no.
Damn.
And when I first went to like a different church and had wine, I was like,
well, what is it
what
then?
Is this?
Grape? Schlur.
Yeah? What is it? Grape juice.
It's grape juice. That's wine. That's wine.
Yeah. So I would align myself with Methodism, although I also dabble in Quakerism as well.
You dabble in Quakerism?
I dabble in Quakerism.
You know what? You know, we could side quest this.
We could. We'll go back.
You don't want to give me the Methodist breakdown and the Quaker breakdown.
No, and also this is about you.
Sorry.
And masculinity. And
my nan lived next to a Quaker place. I don't know much about Quakers. It's a great name, though, isn't it?
It is a great name. They're very peaceful. They sit in silence and and like wait for the spirit to move them.
Word is God is word, right?
Yeah.
Damn.
Right. More about you.
Sorry.
Stay on track.
Silence is. I mean, that's a whole other thing. But yeah.
Please don't be silent for the
rest of
the
I won't be silent. Sorry. That would be amazing, wouldn't it?
So, going back to my brother, he was. So your first Rizzle Kicks album single came out 2011.
It did.
And he would have been 12 or 13.
Okay.
And I was thinking about his experiences of growing into an adult, into a man, and how masculinity and talking about masculinity has changed over that time. And I wanted to ask you how you think it's changed and whether you think that's for the better or worse. Like, I was thinking we don't even have the language, I don't know, to talk about masculinity. And
I don't know if it's like a controversial take, but if we're gonna go that far back, if we're gonna go back like, well, what would that be, 15 years, I actually think that if we're comparing the conversation now to then, without a doubt it's better. Like, without a doubt there's improvement, even though it feels in short bursts like it isn't. A lot of the big hindrances, I think, for us feeling as though there's a move forward is because the internet is almost exclusively driven by fear-mongering and extremity. So we'll be literally fed like the worst possible type of man, for example, but not even in our country necessarily, in like another country, and that will just continually reinforce a feeling of fear and separation, which I think actually contributes to a more sour atmosphere. Not to say that there aren't also many valid reasons to be concerned, right? Like, especially in terms of like boys getting radicalized and stuff. But I actually wrote an article once called The Curious Case of Millennial Amnesia. And it was just me realizing or reminding people that the concern we have for the things that Andrew Tate, for example, has been saying and spewing for 4 or 5 years, that was just how people spoke in the late noughties. Like, I literally think people forget what was considered to be acceptable. Like, there'd be jokes about assault. That's normal. That'd be like mainstream BBC One, BBC Two comedians be making jokes about severe assault. I didn't want to say the word, but you guys get know where I'm going. And that was like commonplace. The whole jokes about women in the kitchen and da-da-da-da, you'd be saying that in school all the time. Like, the fact that teachers are now shocked by young boys saying that, for me, is bizarre. What's about to land? What's that? Oh, God, sorry. Was a plane about to land then?
It sounded like a football match.
What was that? Someone watching a footy? Come on. So my point is, like, for example, like, you know, Eminem, right? So Eminem, that was kind of near around his peak. Fantastic user of words. The topics, nah. That can't come around again. I would happily dismiss and erase many of those songs that were able to just, I don't know, somehow we were like just cool with that. Like, it was just really casual, just like, hey, I hate my mom and ex-girlfriend. We're like, yeah, sick rap. It's like, what? It's bizarre. So that was mainstream, right? So at the very least, we're now dealing with what happens when you push people into the fringes and then the fringe like blows up and then we're going, ah, that's the new issue. But I think it's better. This is a really diluted way of explaining how I feel, but I was driving down a motorway the other day. I think I was driving up north and there was a car in front of me. It was like an old Volkswagen Golf or something. And on the back of it, it said, check on your mates, right? And it was just these two blokes driving. And I was like, come on, that is amazing. I genuinely think like that is, I don't know. It was just like a really interesting signifier of like, that's huge in comparison to what we used to have. That's huge. And you can, if you push into your algorithm, if you decide you want to watch a video of, I don't know, like there was a class recently about loads of dads. It was actually a sober. It was called like, oh God.
It's the ponytail.
Yes.
One. Yeah.
Yes.
Pints and ponytails.
Pints and ponytails. Right. So it's 0% alcohol, learning how to ponytail and braid hair. Incredible. If you watch that video, you get fed other videos. You can actually change the algorithm to be loads of dads doing really cool stuff and stuff that I never, ever, 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 ever heard, thought, saw or felt before. Complete acceptance of detachment, regimented upbringing, you know, like, dude, like just one generation ago, you could get, you know, like corporal punishment. Is that right? In school, you just get like hit, you know? So I don't know, man. Like I think we've come forward and in a good way, but it does feel scary sometimes, but it's a net positive in comparison to 15 years ago. I was talking rubbish, by the way, let's be clear about that. I was talking rubbish. I was fully in there, man. I was like saying all the bad things and like, I need to delete my tweets.
Yeah, I do feel like every celebrity, like every few months you get like old tweets.
Dragged back up. But then a part of me is also like, maybe there's a beauty in accepting the fact that I used to be like that. I mean, a lot of people get cancelled because of things they've said, but I'm a believer in growth, you know? Like people should have an opportunity to apologise and prove that they, well, actually, that is something I don't need to explain to a room full of Christians, eh? All right, second chances than that. Repent.
I was going to ask you about this because as I was reading your book, again, very good. Everyone should go out and get it. I was like acknowledging that it was written or at least published 2 years ago,
yeah,
if not,
that, yeah.
And then written maybe
before.
Yeah. And so I wondered if you were to add an epilogue or an extra chapter.
Yes.
Is there something that you would want to add, change? Yeah.
Well, you know what's fascinating is I actually did have to add an extra chapter to the paperback. And what blew my mind the most is the chapter I added was I had forgotten, even though I had spoken about addiction, validation, like a very confused relationship I had with love and intimacy. I hadn't written about losing my virginity, which I thought was really wild. And so I added this extra chapter, and it actually turned out that the story of that was not about that in the end. It was about school and my place in school. Anyway, it was like a really interesting experience to realize that during that process I'd forgotten to, you know, some people would start with that, you know, some people would be like right in the mix, like, yo. So yeah, that was an interesting experience to add. And also, honestly, even though people would most, like, the most notable bit of feedback I get from the book is that it's brutally honest, there are still places to go. and that those places I'm exploring in my next book, and that's like yeah, I had to like maybe with some people in my life I just eased them in, and there were little bits that I kind of left out for their own comfort, but now they know that's my space, maybe I can go further into that.
Okay, so you're teasing a next book?
No, I'm definitely gonna write another book. I want to write loads of books. Yeah. It's just I've my knowledge of this, the like honestly when I wrote that book it was in response to Me Too, right? So it's like that was 2017, 2018, and I felt like the conversation was in quite a beautiful place actually. I remember people being quite open to discussion about like re-engaging with workplace behavior and relationship, like, you know, the reason I'm even here is because I wrote an article for The Guardian basically saying that I felt that I'd been told stories and conditioned into a space where I didn't know how to regulate my emotions and I was a bad boyfriend. That was really it. And then there was this beautiful phase, and then it turned after lockdown because, you know, you then had people who were separated and apart, and then they were online, and then there were young boys and they were getting scammed, and then it all just went a bit sour, and my book came out like in the midst of this manosphere thing, and so I was suddenly thrown into all these conversations, and I feel like I now have a duty. It's annoying. It's like, it's not even like I've chosen. It's like, I'm not even like, I'm literally not an expert. I say this to people all the time. I speak about my own experiences, but I've been pushed into this space because there just weren't voices to like balance out the other side. So now naturally, of course I want to write another book because now I've spoken to loads of people and I know more and I feel like I have to. It's my role, you know, like it's beyond me. It's like I have a role in community now.
And in Christian terms, we would call that like a mission or a vocation or a ministry even. And how would that make you feel?
A mission to do what?
Or like I would say ministry, and we use I would say ministry to say we have a calling as Christians to respond to God's love in a particular way. So some people are vicars, some people are teachers, some people are authors and talk about masculinity. Would that feel like...
Are you trying to convert me?
Is it working?
Is this what you're doing? Are you on a mission right now?
No, I'm not.
I love that element of religion, so being of service. Yeah, I think it is. I think it's beyond me. Yeah, I'll whatever you want to call it, I'll do it. Yeah, I think it's really rewarding. I mean, that's one of the things I say to boys that I'm working with or like teenagers. It's not like this idea of selflessness. I don't even know what that means, man. I get such a vibe of being of service. It's very selfish. I like it. I'm like, I feel good about myself, you know, and if that is like that's a win-win. If I've helped someone and then I feel good, like, what the hell? Why don't I just do that all the time? I honestly think it's like the final form.
Like the self-actualization of...
Yeah, it's like the final form. Like, you know what I mean? Like, obviously we have to survive, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a reason why I think this system can get away with underpaying people who have incredible hearts, because the actual reward transcends something like money. I still think they should be paid more. I still think teachers should be paid more, carers should be paid more. But it's like it's both upsetting and an indication of like, yeah, you have to pay people loads of money to do things that are anti-human, but actually things that we're naturally bound to do in service and in love to each other, we will just do, you know? But we should get paid more. Yeah. People should get paid more. It's not fair.
It's not fair.
And when I was thinking about your book, and you mentioned about your mum and how she's a very selfless person, a very giving person.
Yeah.
And I wondered about what you just said about the gendered element of those roles and whether you feel that men should be going into those roles, and how as a society could we encourage men to be going into careers that are stereotypically female?
For women, oh my God. Listen, I'm passionate about this. Again, that is not an ideology. This annoys me so much, right? The idea of men being in the care sector being like, so I think people have accused me before of like feminist propaganda. And I'm like, no, dude, you're gonna die otherwise. Like, it's actual survival. Like, we're really at a point where there was just a talk I unfortunately missed about like the future of economy or whatever, which undoubtedly would have mentioned AI, right? It's one of the most obviously big existential shifts in our life. Why is you saying no AI? Oh, they didn't mention AI in the economy talk. Well, they mentioned it to me. this morning. Oh. Well, anyway, regardless, sorry, I shouldn't. Regardless, my point is, that's going to be, that's the jobs that are cutting away, being cut away, are labor-based or like typically male jobs. So the idea of moving into jobs that include how we feel and connecting to other people, it is survival. It's survival. Like, if you want to get paid, if you want to be able to engage in our economic system, you better learn how to feel as quick as possible. It's beyond it being a luxury. People think that's, they say, oh, you've got enough money for therapy, you've got whatever. It's like, no, bro, like, you have to learn how to feel, because all the heady things, they're going to go. Like, the brain stuff's gone, bro. You better learn how to feel. And that's got so many benefits. Not only can you work in sectors where you're like that are based on compassion and empathy, but then that will improve your friendships and improve your relationship and improve your ability to parent. Like, it is literally the single most beneficial thing a human could do, especially men. I literally got taught how to feel. People think it's intrinsic. It's not intrinsic. That's my opinion. I'm saying absolute. It's not intrinsic. You learn.
Well, this is what I wanted to ask you, and kind of what before we came on, what I was trying to get at is, you talk a lot to men and boys, yeah, which is very important. However, I think from my perspective as a young woman and with my friends who are mainly female and mostly lesbians, so they really don't have a lot of like male presence in their life.
Yeah.
I
hate men.
Some of them. I guess, what would you want to say to young women to help them understand that? Because for me, the idea of being taught to feel seems quite alien, because I completely agree with you. It's social.
Well, because you think it's intrinsic.
No, because I think women are socially conditioned
to
be
feel.
To feel.
True. Don't see little boys going around with little doll boys, do you?
No.
So an immediate understanding that, like, to take care of something outside of yourself.
So I guess what
like
would
a Tamagotchi
yeah.
maybe?
Do they still exist?
Yeah, but my Tamagotchi died all the time.
Oh.
Anyway, sorry.
I never had one.
Yeah.
So I guess, what would you want to say to young women to help them understand the journey that men go on?
Oh. I think women understand, no? I don't know. I feel like that's an you know, the... Oh, that's a big one, you know. I think, like... What I feel like is important to respond to from my perspective is I have a lot of friends. I've got a girl friends, girl met women, friends who are women. And they, you know, a lot of them are what's the word? They've lost faith in men, or they feel these swathes of disappointment. But I think it's important to remind them or people around that the way the system currently set up, it requires a boy or a man to detach from their body when they're young, right? That's a requirement in order to uphold a system that's essentially anti-human. And the reason I say it's anti-human is because if you look at who rises to the top of our current system, I don't look at them and go, wow, what wonderful reflections of like compassionate humanity. And they're going like, this is mental that they have so much money. You know what I mean? Like, that's the way we can look at that. That is what the system creates, right? So we're battling an environment that fosters boys that detach. And yes, it's horrible to be on the receiving end of that, but we always have to remember that no boy is ever born wanting to experience that. Every single child on the planet is born with the desire for love. That's it. There's a small proportion, perhaps, psychopaths. I don't know what the current studies are with the amygdala or whatever, but the large majority, if not almost entirety, of children born, they just need love, right? And so that's what we're trying to foster. And we understand that the people who have moved into a space of being unable to emotionally connect, that is ultimately a sad story. You know, it's not doesn't make the behavior acceptable, right? But it's like, it's not coming from a place of like desiring power at the expense of other people. That is not a good, and it's not a nice place to be. Can I say, like, as an example, I know I keep talking about him, but just, it drives me nuts that I've had to sit there here for 5 years with people discussing their Tates or whatever. Andrew Tate, as an example of the Manosphere, which obviously everybody uses, he has been literally verbatim saying things that do not reflect any sense of happiness whatsoever. Like, he literally says that happiness is something reserved for women and children. He said that, right? Like, why are you following a guy who doesn't even believe that men can be happy? Do you know what I'm saying?
I agree with
it's
you.
It's like a complete submission to this idea that it's just an inaccessible part of life. It's a massively accessible part of life. Every human wants to feel love. Everything any human does is out of a result for, a desire for, or lack of love. That's the only two reasons anyone does anything.
Yeah, I agree with you. I guess maybe to give an example of somewhere where I've personally felt a conflict about my role.
Yeah, go on.
Is, so trigger warning, I'm going to mention SA, not in detail. Okay. But I used to date a guy who I found out afterwards had been accused of SAing somebody. And the way that I heard it and the person I heard it from, I was quite convinced that it was true. And he got back in touch with me and said, hey, would love to meet up for coffee. And I went through maybe 6 months of deliberating of, do I meet up with this man and attempt to talk to him about why I don't see him in the same way, why I obviously don't think that what he did was acceptable, and try and build that kind of forgiving relationship. And especially as a Christian, because my gut instinct was like, oh, well, I'm supposed to forgive, and therefore, you know, what do I do? And then I also felt just this sort of gut reaction of, I don't want to have anything to do with this man, and I think that's really horrible, and I, like, you know, the only consequence that he'll really face is social ostracization, and so maybe I can deliver that. But then he might just end up going further down into, well, all women are horrible and I hate women, and that kind of, yeah, that lane. So I guess my question is, how do you feel about that, and what, as a young woman, are we supposed, maybe not specifically for that, but can you see the conflict that I feel?
Yeah, I can. So I guess there's, I mean, this is deep, right? This is a deep philosophical fucking, there's what I believe, you know, my expectation for an everyday person's capacity for, like, I think everybody has to feel all the emotions that come with that, right? For me personally, in my journey, I've actually been too quick to forgive on occasion because it's not authentic. I think it's absolutely fine to feel anger and feel anger in a way that isn't massively harmful, like rage, to just accept that we feel anger, and that anger might come with a boundary. So I don't think that it's everybody's role to reach out to somebody and, like, help them transcend. But to the same effect, that is what would be the most disabling thing, is to greet someone who has done really horrendous things or a thing and meet them with, like, a love that they've clearly been missing. That would be the most, like, transcended approach to it. Whether or not a human is capable of doing that or even expect them to do it is another question, right? Like, firstly, the communication is important, I think. Does he know? Does he know that that's what he's...
Well, he does now, because I decided to talk to him about
right.
it.
Right. And what was the response?
He denied it. And I think at that point I was like, you're clearly not ready for this conversation. But it took maybe like 10 months. He messaged me at the beginning of the year, and I didn't meet him until like the end of the year.
I'm a believer in for certain things. I believe in restorative justice, right? If there's a space where people, two parties, can engage with, like, positive intent and with a desire for connection, I think that's brilliant. But outside of that, like, my focus is with the person who's experienced that. That for me is what dictates it, the survivor or the person who has had to go through that. I feel like sometimes we lean too far into, like, how can we help this person rehabilitate? And I'm like, well, maybe I'll get to that after. I want to see how this person's feeling first and put my energy into that person, because, like, what? Yeah, you know? Okay. Like, I just think that's really important. So I don't care so much about the other person for a bit.
Okay, we've gone deep, so I'm going to, like, let us take a breather.
That is deep.
Sorry, I told you I did philosophy.
That's great. No, that's great. I'm sure some people appreciate that.
They often have that effect on people.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you can see, but at the back next to lovely Anna Malna.
Oh my God, it's a Wheel of Fortune.
It is a Wheel of Fortune. Yes. And I have a question behind us.
I can just
us.
See the word death.
Yes. So my lovely question card.
What happens if I land on that?
Well, if you, obviously everything is consensual, so you can just say, I don't want to do this.
I don't want to die. So I'm not afraid of it. I know where I'm going. No, I'm joking.
So if we weren't or you weren't afraid of being judged, what would you say about? And if Anna could spin the wheel.
Oh, this is fun.
Can we have some like do 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 do?
Jesus, that you stung that too hard, haven't you?
Yeah.
We're gonna be here till
really
tomorrow.
Went for it.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I'm glad I avoided pineapple pizza.
I actually can't read it.
What did it?
Oh.
It's on the line.
Right on the line. Between the same thing, though, no?
Are they the same?
They're the same, which is kind of a failure, ironic.
If we weren't afraid of being judged, what would we say about our biggest failures?
Yeah.
Am I talking about... Wait, what?
You can take that question any way you want, but I guess I would be interested in what you would say about what you perceive to be your biggest failure.
My biggest failure?
I don't like the word failure.
I've got so many. Oh, mate. If I wasn't afraid of being judged, I mean, I've like low-key built my whole career on just telling everybody how much I failed. Like that is. Look, the next thing I want to write about is actually sex, because I do think that the lack of conversation, healthy conversation around it, creates unfortunate situations, perhaps similar to the one your friend experienced. And so, I think a lot of angst and projection and like essentially situations that can lead to ruining people's lives are the initial seed is a fear of being perceived as a failure, you know, like as in terms of like being disappointing, or but we don't have the language or the understanding that that's okay, you know. So I'm not afraid of being judged, but I do think that space particularly, it seems like for men, I don't know, man, it's like locked away. Like, what do we desire? Like, when did we mess up? Like, how long do you last? You know, how, like, all these questions that we might laugh about, or even talking about that area, like, I think people find uncomfortable. So I think that's a good place to start talking about things. Right?
Okay.
All in good time.
Obviously, again, you can tell me to go away
with
any of these questions. But within Christian contexts, purity culture is a big thing. And
what does that mean?
So, well...
Is this no sex before marriage?
Well, can be that.
No sex after marriage?
Well, can't be that as well. Sex is for just making children, no practicing.
It's just... Is that what you guys believe?
No, but we don't... Well, we don't talk about...
Wow.
We don't talk about it, so...
I'm scared of this bit.
Okay. Me too.
I don't believe in that.
No, well, nor do I. Okay. But I grew up in the church, and it was less of a... I was never given the purity culture talk of... Like, I don't know whether some people experience this, but...
Are we allowed to say this? Is this all right to say?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Holly will stop me if I go too far.
Really? Okay, cool.
And, like, some people got the talk of, like, oh, here's a piece of cake, but I've taken a bite out of it, you don't want it anymore, and that's the same as your body, like, you know, if you have sex
before marriage. What cake? That's such a wild analogy. Like, what's the cake, bro? If that's coffee and walnut, it's getting munched. I'm finishing that cake. Lemon drizzle? Yes, please.
Which cake would you say no to?
You know, like if you get like a dry chocolate cake, it's not even like good chocolate. It's like, you can get that away from me right now.
Okay.
But sorry, so that's the analogy they gave you for
sex. They didn't give me, but that's sometimes what people experience. I'm getting a nod from B of like different... ways that churches handle talking about sex, and I think that it does a lot of damage to people. However, I also wonder, I sometimes have debates with my female friends particularly about whether the sex liberation age of the 60s kind of backfired on women. So I guess my question is about how do you think...
In what sense?
So I think that women... Now I know how it feels to be in your spot.
Yeah.
I think that because we managed to have the pill and there was contraception and sex moved on and started to become more socially acceptable, I also think that women have still been left with the pressures of the consequences of sex.
Sure.
So in my experience, it's still surprising to a man if you say, I would rather you use a condom, for example.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean,
that's not good.
It's dire out there.
That's not good.
So I guess, yeah,
that's
my, I think there's a pressure on women to be like young and free and like liberal, but also if you get pregnant or get an STI, that's a you problem, not a me problem. I guess from a Christian perspective, or a, like not from your space of Christian perspective, but how do you think we can start talking to children, young people, each other about sex?
Yeah, that's a big question, isn't it? Let's be real. I think that we need to just start... I think that if we are to talk about... We need to be able to feel comfortable talking about it at all, for a start. And also, I don't know, I think like where I know that people are uncomfortable between like age and whatever else. I really don't know. I don't actually have the answer for that. I don't have the answer for what I think it might be case by case, might be cultural nuance to a lot of this stuff. All I do know is that I think we underestimate people's capacity to want to learn and understand. And I think it's better to say something than nothing, you know, because in the space of nothing, you get people on the internet, you get videos, you get whatever, who are giving the faulty information. And so I think the more we learn, the better. And I also believe that, just on an existential level, I think it's insane that our bodies can create pleasure. I think that's wild. And I actually get conspiratorial because I think if we lent more into the idea that we have the ability to create dopamine, then we'd be harder to control, you know? So I think that, like, anyway, I think that like it can be used. It's like life force, right? It's like the life force. That's, people believe that's what creates creativity. That's, you know, and I think there's a middle. I don't think people should be running around just giving their energy to anybody. I think there's a middle. I think, you know, I don't think it should be full restriction. I don't think it should be full. Everything in life should be about balance, right? So it's just like understanding your energy, respecting it, appreciating it, but not feeling restricted or a sense of shame. That's ideal. But yeah, I really think that I just can't get over the fact that my body can generate like a feeling of excitement for all types of reasons. That's wild, you know. That's really wild, and they sell that to us in other ways, like gaming.
Yeah. Well, and there's statistics which show that more and more young men and young women are learning how to have sex from porn.
Yes, it's awful.
So I think,
so you better start talking about it.
So, not to you don't have to ask questions about sex. That's fine. But you've heard enough from me and my questions. So, just
Phoebe, I think you've been brilliant. Make some noise. Legend.
So now I'm gonna.
And most people are still here. You know, like you got into sex, you lost about 6 people. That's fine. Like we're good.
Yeah. So I'm gonna turn the tables around to you, lot. Affectionately, you lot. If anyone has a question that they would like to ask, lovely. Oh, over here. Yeah.
Do you use the mic? You don't have.
This feels like a trip hazard.
Oh, there's another mic. Oh, you have to actually walk to the front. That's going to turn everyone off.
I've had to move. What would you say to 14-year-old Jordan if you had the chance?
What would I say to 14-year-old Jordan? I would say, don't worry, your second ball will drop. And that's an example of the kind of conversations we should be having. I didn't know what the hell was going on, bro. I hit puberty like 3 years after all my friends. It was crazy. Anyway, sorry, that is genuinely what I did. I just comfort him. Don't worry.
I wouldn't have said that to 14-year-old Phoebe.
Okay, so, all right, yeah.
anyone else?
But I tell you what, a couple of my girlmates were saying they didn't even realise that balls dropped. I was like, that's a testament to our sex education in school. They didn't even know that they descended.
Yeah, I feel like our sex education... Actually, do you know the tea video?
The consent one?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
It is really great.
They teach that in schools now?
Yeah. So
oh, great. Finally.
Yeah, but they didn't teach about puberty. Like, they did, but like on a biological level rather than like a... This is what it will.
I just remember my teacher being so uncomfortable. He's just in those sex ed classes being like, is the video about condoms anyway? Like,
ugh. We have a question here.
Oh, you have to walk to the front, man. This is deep.
Not too deep, but John, you talked a lot about honesty and getting people talking. Where do we get men talking these days? Because men tend to meet for activities, go to a football game, play cricket. Yeah. How do we change that culture that men actually meet to talk?
What, with no other activity? Oh, that's interesting. I'm not against the activities, I'll be real. I think if there is decent conversation with the activities, I think that's a good thing. I suspect more men are going to be hiking. I said this on my thing earlier, but I really feel like men have a calling, and women, to be honest. I think women have already been hiking a lot. I've met my friends in Yorkshire, certainly. Northern women seem to love hiking. Like, they're just climbing. I went to Cumbria, actually, not even Yorkshire. I went to the Lake District the other day, and I was woken up. I was in a tent on top of my car, right? And I woke up at 5:30 in the morning to these two Yorkshire girls on a Saturday morning. Woke me up, but I'd slept already. I had a good sleep. So I woke up. They went up to this hike. I didn't know much about this hike. I did this hike about an hour after them. This hike was hard, right? This was like up. It was like 750 meters up, right? It was like up, up, up. I'm like halfway up, maybe 600 meters. I'm looking at the rest of this mountain being like, geez. And what do I hear? Yap, 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 yap. These girls walking down. Yap, 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 yap. Just did it for a laugh. Then she's on FaceTime going, what up? What are you doing later? I'm like, that must be easy if they did it. Dude, that was hard. These girls are different up there. They're built different. Crazy. But yeah, but there were also groups of boys that were, you know, congregating there. And I think it's inescapable for that to be a unifying force. So I'm hoping that that kind of activity, where it lends itself more to talking, you know, because you are going for extended periods of just walking, that might work out, you know. It's not, but men in a circle, ancient. Anybody in circles, ancient, you know. So if we can encourage that, great. I'm sure there's more men's circles popping up in, around the place, but
coincidentally, yeah, Quakers meet in circles.
That's not coincidentally, it's ancient, yo. I'm with that. Because you're all facing each other, man. Imagine being in a square, that'd be weird. Like, the people on the corners, they'd just be there like, we're really close.
I feel like... Yeah,
meeting at a hectagon.
Hectagon's one of my favourite shapes. 10 out of 10. Sorry.
Is it 10 out of 10 or is it... I was trying to make a number joke there.
6 out of 6.
6 out of 6, yeah.
any other questions? Oh, okay.
Do you feel like you have, like, a private self and a public self?
Oh, my God.
And maybe, either if it's yes or no, how do you navigate having so much of yourself in the public eye and out there on the internet, I guess?
Thanks for your question. I think it's safe to say that, like, I am literally the same person all the time. And I guess that's like, worked out for me in that people think that's, like, a marketable thing to be authentic. Someone says, authentic, how authentic? But, like, yeah, listen, I was like, recently in the news for, like, a breakup, and that was one of the weirdest experiences of my life. I didn't even feel like it was me that I was seeing. It was, like, a version of me engaging with people. It was just this parasocial, bizarre trip that I was experiencing. Nothing was that accurate. Nothing was, you know, it was really odd. And so that wasn't nice. And I think net, like, on whole, I don't enjoy being famous at all. I think it's really odd. I don't believe in celebrity culture. I don't believe in pedestaling people. I believe in the sharing of knowledge. I believe that some people are good at things that other people find hard, and vice versa. But I said this earlier in my talk, like, I have a real, real, real issue with people, like, marveling at me because I don't identify with the idea that, like, I am that I have, like, a different, you know, like, I even when I was younger, I remember I was walking from Clapham Station once, and this guy bumped into me, and he was like, oh, are you in Rizzle Kicks? And I went, yeah. And he went, what are you doing here? And I was like, well, I just got the train. What else would I be doing? And he was like, well, I don't know, I thought you'd be, like, walking somewhere else. And I'm like, I didn't know there's, like, separate routes for, like, famous people. Like, there's, like, underground fame tunnels. There isn't underground fame tunnels. There's not. It's. But listen, I think everybody acknowledges it. I think nowadays people are starting to lose their connection or their idolization of it. Because we see everything, I think a lot of people are here now going, I could never do that. Whereas I think when I was younger, because there was a mystique and you just see people pop up like legendary Pokemon, you go, oh, I wish I was famous, you know? Now you're seeing like people getting dragged. It's like getting dragged every day. Like every day someone's getting comments going, oh, you're a knob or whatever. And they're going like, no, I couldn't do that, you know? So yeah, I think I've lost, there's no separation between my personal and public life. And it's tough. I find it hard. I don't believe in that. I don't believe in idols in that sense.
Okay, interesting. I was just going to say, I always, like, when I'm being driven on the motorway, not that I have a chauffeur, just, like, if I'm with someone else.
Right.
I always like looking in the windows of other cars, and I'm like, why have I never seen a famous person driving up the M5? Like, like surely you must drive up the M5 at some point.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Is that on the way to the lakes? I don't know. Is it? Where is the M5?
Okay,
M6. Where am I going on the M6? I drive everywhere. Lake District. Oh, where's the M5 then?
Below it.
Where's that go to? Devon. I've been around, man. I've been driving everywhere. But like, also, I don't know. Like, well, what do you think about fame? Do you think famous people are important?
Well, what do I think about fame? I wouldn't like to be famous.
Why?
Why? Mainly because I think I would like to have a private life.
Yeah,
and
privacy, right?
I mean, I'm terrible at, like, I don't update my Instagram. Like, okay, that so steals, yeah. like, a lot of work.
Maintenance.
Yeah, and I guess... I was going to ask you about this, about shifting between who you were and who you are, because... Yeah. So when I was talking to my friends about interviewing you, one of them thought for quite a long time I meant Jordan Peterson, and I had to be like, no, yeah, very different guy.
Not me, that's not me.
And then, but they were saying about one of them seen you in a play last year, said you were amazing. Oh, yes. Oscar behind the bar saw you in Rizzle Kicks and said you were like phenomenal.
What era are we talking? Recently, this summer? Belladrum. That was a banging. That was a great show. That was a great show.
Yeah, he said it was good. So I guess like shifting from being performer to being, for want of a better phrase, social commentator to performer again. Like, how do you navigate
the
that?
The social thing is just a duty. I've said it already. It's just like a duty. I feel, I see, listen, all of this stuff I do in terms of men is just because of two reasons. One, I look at teenage boys and I love them. I love teenage boys with all my heart because they're malleable and they can transform into incredible, wonderful human beings. And I want them to. Similarly, I see men in their 60s who are alone and they're alcoholics and they are isolated and they're separated. And I don't want that for those teenage boys. So the only reason why I feel compelled to be in spaces and say, hey, sobriety is cool, or hey, you know, I actually love all the women in my life and I have really close female friends and that's really important to me. Anything I can do to prevent a person from falling into a space of isolation in the latter years and not being appreciated as an elder and also not feeling a sense of worthlessness as a teen, I will do. It's not to do with me. The other bit of it, yeah, listen, I can't lie, in the material world you get little ups from it, you get like free clothes, whatever, some people pay you to be like a good person or whatever, like, great, I have to survive like everyone else does, so I'm gonna do it, I'm gonna operate in the game. But do I think the game makes sense? Not really. Like, okay, tell you what, who do you idolize anyone?
I mean, am I like obliged to say Jesus? But because that's really cringe, and I don't want to do
Jesus
that.
Is Jesus a celebrity?
Well, is it John Lennon who was like, he's more famous than Jesus? I don't know. I mean, celebrity feels like
he's
the wrong
defo,
one.
He's famous. Let's be real. He's
John Lennon. Jesus.
He's got John Lennon.
Do you mean John Lennon? Or
John
Jesus?
Lennon's more famous than Jesus.
That's what he
no,
said.
No, he's not.
Is that
what
not?
Does he
is
mean?
That him who said that?
That is such a John Lennon thing to say. That isn't it? Without Imagine. There's some questions. Jesus, yeah, you can, I guess. Yeah, but that's different because that's like a religious idol.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to think of like celebrities that I really admire.
I guess he is at the time, isn't it? People would have been like, yo, you heard about Jesus. That is kind of like... Sorry. I'm just imagining. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Can you imagine being alive at that time? Someone's just like, dude, this guy's just done the craziest shit.
But he did get cancelled,
Dude, they're crucifying him, is so deep, bro. Like, he's stuck for us. Yeah. Sorry.
Crazy. You seem to know quite a lot about this whole
thing. I like Jesus.
Thing. Yeah?
Yeah, I do. Sorry. Again, my things with the organized religion, the story of him, great. Well, Jesus is my... I'd be mates with him. Sounds great. Are you joking me?
Yeah. The water into wine thing.
I love that guy.
Really
no,
cool.
I love that guy.
Yeah.
Great hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like a socialist, no? I love Jesus.
I would say so. We will get to your question. Whoever put their hand up.
No, you haven't answered my question. Aside from Jesus, who is the most famous person? Do you idolise anybody famous?
I'm trying to think who I follow on Instagram. I really like Greta Thunberg.
Greta Thunberg.
Really cool. I actually really like Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce Springsteen.
I think he just has a vibe.
Okay. Would you feel nervous in Bruce Springsteen's presence?
I think so.
Why?
Probably. Because I have a sense that he's tall.
Okay.
Like, I don't
so
know.
So do you get nervous in the presence of all tall people?
Yeah.
Okay, right. Fair.
No, I don't think so. I feel like...
Do you think he thinks he's special?
Do you not have to be a celebrity?
A superstar.
Do you not, like, you... Surely, like, I don't know, what do you think?
That's a good observation. Yeah, I think at a certain point you have to develop a level of narcissism in order to actually cope with the trajectory of superstardom. I've seen it happen, and it's very sad. But I think people ultimately try and move away from it, you know?
I think they are, but then at the same time, I think people try and develop, kind of like you were saying about parasocial relationships, that rather than idolise somebody, they bring them to the, like, girl next door vibe, and, like, particularly, like, influencer era, and the fact that you almost have to have, like, open access to people's lives, and they become your sort of best friends.
Yeah, the parasocial thing's crazy. But I think my main point is, like, what I find fascinating is that Bruce Springsteen would have experienced grief. You would have experienced grief, and it's exactly the same. It's exactly the same feeling. Like, the emotional world that binds, like, all humans, that joins us, that keeps us in communion, that cannot be affected by material world. It doesn't matter if you earn 200 grand a year, 30 grand a year. If you lose someone you love, it hurts. That's it. That's the humanness. And so that's why I struggle with the separation, because the material stuff doesn't mean anything, really, because I'm still going to be sad when I lose someone, or sad, or I'm going to be vulnerable when I feel like I love someone. And it's the same. There's no money that can change that emotion. There's money that can make you numb the emotion. But there's no money that can change it.
Yeah. There's a philosopher who I really like, who basically, in very, like, flouncy French words, talks about the fact that at the end of the day, we're all human and we all, like, go to the toilet. And
you're going to say, Bruce Springsteen has a shit, yep. Yeah.
So, yes. Have I answered your question sufficiently?
Yeah, I was just interested to know. I find it interesting. I think one of the gifts my mom gave me as a child was she didn't encourage idolizing anybody. Any human. She didn't encourage that. I think I've always wanted to meet someone at mutual interest, right? So, like, even when I've seen people that I'm like, wow, that person's amazing, I won't actually go over to them. I'll think to myself, I hope one day I will do something that they will also have recognized, and then we can meet each other. Otherwise, it's just like an odd one-way power imbalance, you know?
Well, that's how I felt before this. Like, when I said to you, I was like, this feels really weird. I feel like I've stalked you for, like, 3 weeks. I've been on
your
Instagram.
Well, because of the book. Well, you have been stalking me. Oh,
yeah.
Right, sorry.
Like, all your podcast, like, anything you've done in the last sort of 15 years, I've like, been looking at. So I feel, yeah, I get what you're saying about how you kind of I wanted to create that balance, because I think you are human. And I really got that from your book, that you're human. Well,
thank you. I appreciate that. Send me your book.
I struggled with a dissertation. I can't be doing a book.
Okay, all right.
Our friend at the over here, sorry.
If social media is an echo chamber, how do we know that what we're seeing is an accurate depiction of society? I can answer that quick. It's not. Going outside. Like, you know what's so bizarre is... I was doing a play last year. I think you just mentioned that. Did you mention that? I did a play last year, and because I was so nervous about this play, I went onto a burner phone for 2.5 months, right? 2 months? Sorry. 2.5 weeks. So for those who don't know, a burner phone, a dumb phone, some people might call it. It was an old Nokia. I could just text and call. That was it. Like, there was a whole rush of people about 2 years ago who would do, like, Substacks or blogs or YouTube videos about how amazing their life has been after detoxing off social media and all the perks and the benefits. Dude, 2.5 weeks, I felt profoundly sad. And the reason why I felt profoundly sad wasn't because I wasn't having a great time. It was because I realized that that was actually a whole other dimension that I wasn't a part of, right? And so it was creating a moral, it was having a moral implication on my life that I had never considered. So, for example, someone would be like, oh my God, have you seen that thing that happened? No, I've not seen it. Because I'm on my dumb phone, you know? I'll wait till it's out on the news or out on whatever. And so I ended up being more antisocial than my friends who were on their phones because I couldn't engage with them about that other world. But I'm there going, but I'm looking at the world. Like, I'm seeing it with my eyes. Like, I'm in the world. Let's talk about this world that's here, you know? And so, yeah, it's a real tight, it's a real, I'm stuck with it because there's real positives of like communicating with, let's say, family across the world. You can find loads of positive information. You can be inspired online. You can be inspired by the people you talk to. But you can also find yourself, as we've seen with many of these young boys and then actually young women as well nowadays, you can find yourself in these spirals where what you're talking about is a reflection of a space you don't even live in, you know? I know people saying extreme things that live in areas that are objectively safe. like not in a mean way, but like that's how I knew it had gone too far, you know, where someone was like, oh, you never know. I'm like, I do know because this area, it's sleepy. There's like five people. Like, what are you? I don't understand what it is that you think's going to happen, you know? So we have to be careful because obviously fear is what controls us, right? And it's much to the benefit of these like larger corporations if we're constantly kept in a state of fear because we're easier to control. You can sell people Ring door cameras or you can sell people, I don't know, an extra like mirror on their car. Or I don't know what kind of things you sell people out of fear. There's a lot of things, you know? Yeah. Oh, here's how to triple lock the, I don't know what, you know? Everyone's just like battering the hatches. But the real safety that can be found is in community. I said this before, you know, like it's not in a gated fence. It's in asking your neighbor how they are. Then you don't have to worry because you've got backup. You know what I mean? It's going to the coffee shop, speaking to the person in the coffee shop. How are they? Do you want your regular? Yeah, community, boom. Do you know what I mean? Oh, I'm doing this thing. That's where I feel people can build a real idea of life. So, yeah.
Wow, I feel like that's a perfect place to close.
Yes, thank you.
So thank you, everybody, for your questions.
Everyone should go outside. Everyone should go outside.
Yes.
Big up all of you, because all of you are outside right now. So make some noise for yourselves. We're outside, baby. We're listening and stuff. And we're eating and we're drinking 0%. What?
So, Jordan, thank you so much
for
taking the time. It was
You're a legend.
Great. It was amazing.
Congratulations on your mission. Complete.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.